Welcome to the Arise Podcast. I'm Tanya Anderson, CEO at Arise, and I have a real special guest with me today, Tricia Maloney, who is the Chief Accessibility Advocate for the Department of Transport in Victoria, Australia. Welcome, Tricia.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, Syracuse is a long ways from Australia. Can you tell us why you're here?
Well, I'm looking at end-to-end journeys for people with disabilities from the moment you leave home to the moment you get home again. And I was fortunate to get a Churchill Fellowship to enable me to undertake research around the world.
So you're sort of on a fact-finding mission, looking at how people with disabilities really navigate their environments.
Yeah, and I'm interested in talking to service providers, and I'm also interested in talking to people with disabilities. And so I was very fortunate to talk to people from Arise about their experiences of transport. How did they get to Arise yesterday when we spoke? What were the barriers to getting to wherever it was that they wanted to go? And how are they overcoming them?
Right. So you spoke with our Independent Living Council yesterday, and those are some of the people that connect with us. And of course, as an independent living center, Arise is organized by and directed by people with disabilities, and we employ people with disabilities, so we're all about empowering the individual and completely in sync with what you're doing. What are some of the areas of your focus on this trip to Syracuse, and what have you learned in the last few days?
I've been looking at the caller bus system and how I can adapt that for use in Australia. So we don't have a similar system. So people are expected to use the mainstream services where they can. We have taxi services that are accessible, but that's quite expensive. And so we're looking at how can we modify our systems to work in with that. The other things that I'm interested in are wayfinding, so signage. Does the signage work for people? And when I talk about signage, I mean visual signage as well as audio signage.
Right.
So what you hear should be what you see. And so I asked some questions about that. I had Agnes there yesterday, which was absolutely fabulous because she does use mainstream services. So
right.
She uses the train, she uses the bus. And that's really important for me to see how does it work for somebody who has a large wheelchair.
Right.
And really does travel a lot. So she travels up to Albany.
Right. Right. You're talking about Agnes McCrae, who is our board president. And as you mentioned, she uses a pretty large motorized wheelchair, and she gets all over the place.
Yeah, I think I found a kindred spirit.
Absolutely, right. On the other side of the world.
Yeah,
right.
And there is a network of people with disabilities around the world. We have the Disability Leadership Institute, which is only available to people with disabilities. It's free to join, and it's an information network.
Right.
Although there are, probably because it was founded in Australia, there's probably more opportunities in Australia, but we're hoping to build the network. So far, we're in over 20 countries. So it's just from an idea that came up overnight. And I think that what we need to do is work collaboratively together. So if you're doing something well, I want to take it and bring it home. But if you find something that we're doing well, we're quite happy to share it. We're really involved in co-design.
Right.
And in the Department of Transport, we've built a train together by co-designing it, then co-building a virtual reality version of it and looking at that and seeing if what we've suggested has been incorporated. And we've built a full-size mock-up, a carriage and a half mock-up, so people can actually go and feel and touch what it looks like. And see that what they want is incorporated. And I see that the model here, that's the model you're using, that you're actually working with people with disabilities to design programs to improve their lives.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about what is in place in Australia, because I think you mentioned that there's different systems of transportation, not the caller bus. So you mentioned this carriage that is designed by people with disabilities, and that's a mock-up. So, but what is in place now for someone, say, who uses a wheelchair if they want to get from point A to point B?
Our trains are accessible, and our buses are accessible, and we have accessible taxis.
Okay.
Our trams, not so much. So our trolley cars, not so much. Mainly because we have the largest network in the world and the oldest network in the world.
Of trolley cars?
Yeah.
Okay.
We call them trams, so light rail, I suppose. I'm not sure what they would be. But we don't have all low-floor trams, and we don't have enough platform stops. So we're in the process of trying to work out how do we do it? How do we get compliance without ripping up the whole system? So the trams are accessible in the city centre, but once you start going out of town, it's really quite difficult. So that's the one that we're finding more difficult.
Right.
With the trains, all you have to do is be in the front carriage and the driver loads you. You don't have to ring in advance. You don't have to tell somebody that you're coming. You just have to turn up. The driver gets the ramp out and you get on the train. We have 20 spaces on each train, but it's easier if you just get on the first carriage.
Right. Okay. So in America, there's virtually everywhere you need a car or some motorized vehicle to be able to just take care of your daily tasks. Is that the case in Australia too?
Pretty much. I mean, we're a car country. The further out from the city you go, the more you need a car.
Right.
We have a bus stop right outside our door, which takes us to a train station. We're fine, my husband and I. But we're people of privilege. Mm-hmm. And when you get to the lower socioeconomic areas, which is where you'll find people with disabilities as well,
right,
then it becomes harder. The streets are too narrow to fit a bus down. So how do you make sure that people are able to access the system so that they can get to and from work, for example,
right,
or to and from school? I think of transport as a social determinant of health, because without transport, you can't get an education, you can't get access to health, you can't get access to a job, and you can't get access to the community. So I'm really passionate about improving things for everybody.
Right.
And I will say that even though I'm the chief accessibility advocate and people think that's about disability, it's also about older people, parents with prams, people with luggage, anybody who's hesitant to use public transport.
Right. You've said a couple of really important things that I want to unpack. And one is that looking at transportation as a social determinant of health, which I couldn't agree with you more. And in fact, there's a Medicaid initiative taking place right here in New York State that explicitly is going to be funding transportation as under the Medicaid program, recognizing the value of transportation. So I think you're spot on with that. And the other piece in terms of just really thinking about accessibility as an aspect of universal design is really, I think, how all of us should be thinking about inclusion and access, because they're only the barriers in the world that we have built. It's not the issue is not the person who has a sensory disability or uses a different way to get around. The issue is the barrier in our built environment.
Absolutely. And I often say that because I have a disability. I have a visible physical disability. But it's not about me. It's about the barriers that society places in my way that stops me from getting the same access as everybody else. So we are very keen to explore the Hidden Disability Sunflower Scheme more. So this is to help people who have hidden disabilities or right, invisible disabilities access the world. So there's a sunflower lanyard that you can get, which indicates to people who have done the accreditation that this person has a disability, even if they don't look like they do.
So let me just pause for a minute. So this is a lanyard with a sunflower on it that is a sort of a signal for I have a disability. It's not immediately apparent,
absolutely,
but I have this disability.
So whether it's chronic pain or it's neurodiversity or it's cognitive impairment,
right,
it shouldn't matter. If you need access to support, it shouldn't be about, well, there's Tricia. She's got uses crutches and calipers, so she needs a seat.
Right.
Actually, probably might not need it as much as somebody who has chronic pain.
That's so interesting. So this sunflower, what did you call it, a sunflower society?
It's the Hidden Sunflower Scheme, Hidden Disability Sunflower Scheme, sorry.
And where did that originate?
In the UK. And it's now being run out throughout Australia. I think it's even going into shopping centres now, into the malls.
Is it in the United States at all?
We just saw it at the airport.
Okay.
How funny. We've just been out to Syracuse Airport and they have posters up. I was so pleased to see it because it means that we're starting to recognise that disability is much broader than people think. And when I know in my work, so I work with people who work for our department as well as passengers. And there are many more people in the department who have a disability who don't declare that they have a disability because they're afraid they might lose their jobs. Right. If we had a system where people were reassured that there's nothing wrong with having a disability, and I know you've got Disability Pride coming up soon.
Right.
I always say I'm proud to be a woman with a disability. I'm proud of who I am. I am who I am. People can get over it. I don't really mind.
Right. And again, it's so much wisdom in what you said, because really the label of a disability is completely arbitrary. Some society draws a line, and one side of the line you have a disability and the other side you don't. And in reality, we all have strengths and weaknesses.
Absolutely. And in our country, at 65, apparently you don't have a disability anymore.
You're just old.
So I jumped out of bed on my 65th birthday and found that that didn't actually occur. I still had a disability. And I think the intersection of disability and ageing is something that we need to take more notice of, because many of the things that affect us affect people who are older.
Absolutely. And as you age, you, quote-unquote, acquire disabilities.
Yeah, right. And it's more prevalent. So I think the figure that I saw was something like 59% of people over the age of 65 have a disability. Yeah. And as you age, that goes up.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
And it's just the reality of life. You know.
It is, and it's a good reality, actually. So I wanted to talk a little bit about, you sort of mentioned the issue of stigma in terms of people being afraid to disclose their disabilities. Are there protections in Australia similar to the Americans with Disabilities Act?
There is, or there are. We have the Disability Discrimination Act in Australia. We're not a litigious nation, so we get things done by lobbying.
Okay.
That's our way of doing things. It's not as effective as litigation, let me tell you, but it's not our way, so we're just inclined not to do it. We have a Disability Discrimination Commissioner, and we've just had Rosemary Keynes appointed, who has come to us from the UN, which is really quite a powerful opportunity for us to strengthen. And so I very politely sent her a little note saying, wouldn't it be good to review the Disability Discrimination Act and strengthen it,
right,
so that there are better opportunities for people to change things through the use of the Act.
And how old is that Act?
1992, I want to say.
Oh, so it's very same time frame as the ADA.
A lot of things happened after the International Day of People with Disabilities, and there was a lot of work done after that. And that's been reviewed several times since then. Our biggest change is the National Disability Insurance Scheme, which gives supports to people who have severe and profound disabilities, is what they call it. But what I call it is people who need supports to actually access everyday life.
Right.
So I was a member of that team. I have supports provided by the government to purchase my calipers and my crutches and my other bits and pieces that I need. But now that I've got that, I don't need anything else. My husband is my support worker, as I call him.
Right.
So he provides me with the supports I need for everyday living. But other people need much more than that. We're working on housing at the moment to try and get people out of group homes and into their own independent living spaces. I'm on the NDIS Independent Advisory Council, which is really good.
Right.
And 6 of the 8 people on the board of the NDIS are now people with disabilities. Mm-hmm. 2 years ago, under the previous government, there was 2 people with disabilities.
And it's so important that people with disabilities are making their own decisions.
Absolutely.
And what you're talking about, getting people out of group homes or whatever sort of congregate setting into their own homes, where they're safer, they have more independence, they can communicate or contribute to the community. It makes so much sense. Yeah. So it's the core of what we do at Arise, and it's surprising, but absolutely no surprise that on the other side of the world that it's also the core of your work.
It's been really interesting. So I've traveled the world a lot. I've worked in Africa, I've worked in Asia. And women with disabilities congregate when we see each other. So we come together and we discuss the issues, and the issues are the same wherever we go. People assume that because I'm in Australia, which is a so-called first world nation, that we end up having everything provided. But like everybody else, we still have to battle the ableism that keeps us apart from the rest of the world.
Right. It is a universal battle, and it's so unfortunate that we have to keep having this conversation, but I'm really glad that you're out there traveling the world and having this conversation. Mm. It's very reassuring to me as someone who does this work every day in Syracuse, New York, to know that there's this worldwide network having the same conversation and fighting the same battles. It's just incredibly powerful what you're doing.
But I think that the work that you're doing is powerful too. And I think that we're doing the same work. And that's what's really important. So I've been really impressed with Arise. I've been impressed by the model of governance that you have and the way that it operates here. Nothing about us without us has always been our slogan. And that's clearly happening here.
I couldn't agree more. Thank you so much for your time, Tricia.
Thank you for having me.
I wish you the best.
Thank you.
For more information on how you can support Arise, visit our website at ariseinc.org. Support Arise, support independence.